ITR.
Okay.
Just saying into this?
Yeah, just saying to that.
Hey, it's Brian Posehn.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
This is Ink Studs on CTR.
This is Ink Studs on CITR 101.9 FM, the only show where we talk about comics all the time on CITR. Today, I am playing a very special interview I did with Danny Wilson, who did a book recently called Dude, Where's My Jetpack? And it's all about neat, different sci-fi stuff. Daniel's one of those guys where he's like super geeky, but you can talk to him. He's awesome. So this is the second time I've gotten a chance to interview him. And I know it's not really comics-based, but it's geeky. So I'll go with that. That'll be my excuse. And like I said, he's really awesome. He's so much fun to talk to and hang out with each time he's in town. I hope next time he does a book, he'll come back to Vancouver and we'll hopefully this time I'll have more time to hang out with him, because last time I got to hang out with him and he's a cool guy. Cool, cool, cool. At the same time, I'm playing or I'm going to be having on the InkStuds website, www.inkstuds.com, later today an interview I did with Josh Simmons, which is Too Hot for Radio. It is so graphic and vile, the conversation we have, I can't get it past the censors of CITR. Actually, I'm not even going to bother bringing it up. I know how nasty it is, and I don't think people generally, not everyone will want to hear the conversation we have, but if you are interested in hearing my interview with Josh Simmons, who recently did a book for Fantagraphics called House, take a listen, www.inkstuds.com, and I'm joined on in the interview by Robin Bougie, where we discuss House and a lot of other stuff. So it should be good times fun. So yeah, Daniel Wilson, it'll be good. Next week, my guest will be Kid Koala, interview I did last week with him, which is fabulous. He's a really nice guy, really great. He loves his comics, and he did a great comic book, Newphonia Will Fall, Shall Fall? Will Fall, Shall Fall, can you remember?
What?
No one can remember. It's a great book, and he has a new book coming out, which we talked about, which sounds incredible. Fabulous, fabulous stuff. And week after that will be Joe Chiappetta, who will be on to discuss 16 years of Silly Daddy. He doesn't do them in print anymore, but he has them online, so check out his stuff, just search for Silly Daddy. And he did a bunch of stuff back in the day, the zine day, and has got a pretty wealthy library of comics goodness. The week after that will be an interview with Jim Blanchard, who is one of my favorite guys. He does incredibly detailed portraits of people, just finding like the oddest grotesque things in them. Or he'll do like celebrity portraits, but they do just this really great, weird pop stuff. It's just, wow. His stuff's incredible. He, for those of you who don't know, check out his stuff, Beast and Priest's latest book. He was also the inker for the last 15 issues of Hate by Peter Begg. He was the inker in that. And the Hate Jamboree has a bunch of stories where people make fun of Jim, making him look to be like the world's most grumpy, miserable man. And the week after that, I got lots of good stuff coming. Kim Deitch will be doing an interview with him next month, near the end of the month. We'll have an interview with Jeet here and Chris Ware to discuss Gasoline Alley. I'm very excited about that because I think both those guys are tremendously interesting, smart folks, and Gasoline Alley is an incredible strip, and it's really neat to talk about what they've done with it. So without further ado, same bat time, same bat channel, CITR 101.9 Inkstuds in Vancouver.
There, do you have any idea what you're listening to?
London Philharmonic?
It's Venus.
Huh?
Venus.
Why not? We've bounced signals off the moon's surface. There's no reason that Venus shouldn't radiate impulses.
I don't mean the static. Can't you hear it, the other thing?
What other thing?
Listen to it, Paul. Listen to the voice.
made you welcome to this Earth. You made it the Chino House.
Okay. Once again, joined by Daniel Wilson, who came by, I guess, about a year ago?
Yeah.
To talk about how to survive a robot uprising with a comedic look at the happen chance that one day our world will be taken over by a fearless group of benders from Futurama.
Indeed.
All wanting to take us away and create their own robot utopia.
Robot paradise.
Robot yeah. paradise. Hopefully not full of benders.
Yeah.
So your new book, Where's My Jetpack? A Guide to the Amazing Science Fiction Future That Never Arrived. It's a lot more of a lighthearted read. I don't feel so pessimistic reading this one.
Yeah, well, I filled the thing up with jokes, you know, and some of them are good. Some of them are... some of them make me wince now, but they're all kind of funny. They all made me laugh at some point, so... Yeah, but you know, the focus is on all these technical details.
It seems like it's technical details mixed with, like, kind of a history of the progress of technology. Like, you discuss one thing, like, on the cover, you got the blimp on there, and so you talk about, like, the Zeppelin and stuff. Was that something where yourself, you wanted to research and, like, kind of you had interest in different technologies and just wanted to see how things got there? Or is that something through your own schooling you've already kind of knew and were, like, showing off your brain power?
Well, the sections on robots, all brain power. More sections are related to robotics than you might think, you know? But... When I originally, I think I cover about 30 different technologies in there, and I just picked all of those from the beginning because they're stuff I wanted, right? Like jetpacks, flying cars, all that kind of stuff, but also like space mirrors. I mean, how cool is that? Or space elevators, space vacations, ray guns, you know, the X-ray specs, all that stuff. Now, whatever, on each section, what I ended up doing was really, the first thing I was interested in was, why do I think I want this? Where, you know, where did we see this? So I kind of go into the history a little bit and I say, oh, well, you know, slidewalks were all over the World's Fair of 1964, and that's where they kind of got into the popular consciousness. Or, you know, jetpacks were on the, we saw Buck Rogers on the cover of An Amazing Stories, although it wasn't actually Buck Rogers. It was from a different story, but everyone associated that image with Buck Rogers. So it's like a little bit of like, where did this come from in the pop culture side? And then also, sometimes that leads to early research, like the Zeppelin, you know? I mean, that research on that has come and gone, right?
Yeah.
And then eventually I get into it. Where are the modern products? Where are the, if there's not a product, where are the modern prototypes? Or where can you steal the antiquated technology when they gave up on it at some point, you know?
Was there anything kind of researching that really excited you that you came across that was like...
Well, a lot of it, actually. I mean... Really, this made me really talkative at the bar for like six months while I was researching this book. I'd be like, hey, did you guys know that if you ionized a column of air and trapped it in a cylindrical magnetic field, you could have a hoverboard? My friends were like, stop it! Yeah, you know, I'm like, okay.
You know what, in 19, what? 91, you probably would have been like the talk of the town.
Yeah, no, my friends are very used to that kind of talk and are very jaded. And they'll let me go for a little while. They're cool.
Then they do the shutdown.
Eventually they shut me down. or the alcohol does that. One of the two. But there was a question that you asked that I have not answered yet. And... I've forgotten what it was.
The old technologies that have excited you.
Oh, right.
In your research.
So, you know, I initially set out saying, you know, where is this stuff? And obviously I wouldn't have written a book if it wasn't somewhere.
Yeah.
Right? I'm not going to write a whole book saying, screw technology, they didn't do anything for us. So I found a lot of stuff, actually, when I went looking, right? So let me just... go through some of the stuff I was really surprised by. Like, let's see, the whole teleportation thing, the fact that that's totally real.
And that was where they take photons and are able to, like, I guess they move it across a room or something.
It's like quantum teleportation,
yeah.
The quantum being the important part. you're not going to teleport yourself or a mouse or an insect or anything, right? It's like a few atoms. And what's interesting is on a quantum level, there are only a couple of states that something that, that these particles can be in. And so all you need to do is get another atom that's the same type of atom and put it in the exact same quantum state. And then you've got the same thing, right? The problem is that if you actually try to collect all that information, like figure out which state something's in, you basically screw it up. You can't do it. It's a physical law, the projection postulate or something. So what they do is they use something called entanglement, where you kind of entangle two particles, and one particle is the exact opposite of the other one, but you don't know what it is, and then you entangle that one with another one, and so the final one is the opposite of an opposite. So it's the same, but you never, you're like, it's always behind the curtain. You never figured out what state it was in. Because if you ask it which state it's in, you force it to choose the state, and it doesn't work. And so it's really cool. Like, the thing is, this entanglement thing happens over arbitrary distances, and it happens instantaneously. So it's seriously like magic. Einstein called it a spooky action at a distance. And they've done this thing over, I think they've done it up to 20 miles.
Oh, wow.
I mean, 20 miles, right? But it could be arbitrary. Somebody's in a lab somewhere, you entangle some particles, and shit's just happening. It's really crazy. But it's only going to be used in quantum computers for super fast.
I'm not going to be able to go up to my starship and hang out with Scotty.
Sadly. Poor Scotty, too. You know, he went on a little space vacation.
I forgot that he even died.
I just watched Wrath of Khan, and he really didn't have a very big role in that at all.
I think he was the most forgettable of the cast, which says a lot, because they're a pretty mediocre group of actors. Sorry, Star Trek fans.
Hey, you stick, you know, a leech-like animal in someone's ear, and you never forget them. Do you remember that?
What's it?
Wrath of Khan, when they put the leech and thing in the helmet, and the guy put the helmet on, and it goes into his ear, and it controls his mind.
It's been a long time. I was thinking the Futurama leeches, which they
the
stick on their
slug.
Head.
Yeah.
Yeah, man, I think we're missing a brain slug.
I paused it when Kirk shouts, Khan. Khan! You know, that's probably the most famous part. And literally, his eyes point in two different directions. And, you know, so don't tell me he's a mediocre actor, because that is tough to do, to make your eyes point.
And he was really high.
Yeah, you can't really see what's going on off screen. Someone could, never mind.
Thank you.
the title. Or
yeah, and another technology that I was really... sounded just inspiring was this universal translator. That's the Star Trek inspired. So in Star
and,
Trek...
And Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, the Babelfish.
Oh, right. That's an entity, right, that you swallow or something.
Oh, you stick it
in your ear? Yeah, right. So anyway, this is neither of those. This is the universal translator is just... Normally, they exist to pretty much go between two languages, right? So, for instance, Iraqi in English. And so, it's really, it makes sense. It's a little doodad. It's a portable computer that has speech recognition. So, you say something, it understands what you said, and then it has a translation scheme to translate that to the other language, and then it has speech synthesis and sets it out loud. And as it turns out, actually, the ones they use in Iraq have to be male voices. Isn't that kind of a cultural thing? No one pays attention whenever the soldier has a doodad that talks with a female voice. Isn't that weird, you know? So even the computers... So anyway...
Instilled patriarchy, continuing into technology.
Yeah, just integrated right in. But, no, okay, so that's interesting, whatever. But the real challenge is to make it universal, right? I'm not saying, where's my translator? Screw that. You know, Kirk didn't have a translator. He had a universal translator. So there's like 6,000 different languages that people speak. And if you're going to translate between each of them, that's 36 million different translation schemes. It would take forever to do that.
Dialects.
Yeah, so the idea is to create an interlingua, like this super language, and then convert to it, and then from it, you only need 12,000 schemes now. But this notion, isn't it kind of inspiring, right? That there's this super language that encompasses all human communications, you know, and like if you learn it, I imagine that you kind of...
Noam Chomsky would be jumping with giddy glee right now.
We did it, yeah. Yeah, knowing him, it would be totally The idea is that if you learn it, I imagine that you turn into pure light, and you kind of just are at one with all humankind. It's like Gandhi appears.
Your spiritual enlightenment through technology.
Yeah.
I think that's the next book.
I speak only the interlingua. Anyway. Yeah, that just kind of got me thinking about the interlingua. It's kind of amazing.
Now, part of the book, I mean, there's the technology stuff, the technology research results, so your love of sci-fi stuff. So what kind of sci-fi stuff are you bringing into it? Like, you're talking about Wrath of Khan. You're referencing a lot of Arthur C. Clarke stuff.
So a lot of it was... sci-fi authors, so it's book stuff.
Yeah.
And people will throw things into books just as throwaways,
yeah.
Right? Like, it'll be one page, something happens, and it really sticks with everybody. And so, and other times it'll be a whole entire, you know, short story or book about centering around one technology. Like, you remember Larry Niven's Ring World. Like, that's an example of, so that was like a ribbon of land that goes around the sun and rotates around, and it's like, the Earth is like this one tiny pinprick, a point, basically, in relation to the sun. Now imagine if you just took Earth and smeared it into a big ring and put it around the sun. It's like a bajillion times more landmass. You collect all the...
Yeah.
You collect much more of the sun's energy. It's like a Dyson sphere, but not in a total sphere. Anyway, like, that kind of stuff where some physicist starts thinking, well, could we do that? You know, what type of materials would we have to have? You know, so for instance, there are... this idea of a space elevator, right?
Yeah.
Where you just attach a...
And that's a pretty old notion, right?
Yeah, sure. That was explored in a lot of old sci-fi. I can't remember. I have...
And Roald Dahl got pretty close to that.
Right. So they...
the Greek class elevator.
Yeah, well, this doesn't just fly. This kind... It doesn't have any jauntily dressed...
Oompa Loompas?
Yeah. Inside of it. So physicists start thinking, you know, could we actually do this? Could you, if you put a counterweight in space and a weight on the Earth and you attach them with cables or a single cable, how strong would the cable have to be, right? How big would the counterweight have to be? What would the force be on the cable so that you could actually, it wouldn't yank the thing off the Earth or, you know, and how would you design a robotic lifter that would climb the cable? And nobody ever ran into a problem. So carbon nanotubes really saved the day in terms of cable strength. They've got it, right?
Oh,
they're,
wow.
They're starting to weave those things into longer and longer fibers. It's really expensive right now, but it's coming down in cost. And so these guys are like, well, hell, this could be real. And they're into it, because it would mean that you could go transport payloads into space for like just a fraction of the cost of this huge rocket that we have now. And so they started working on it. NASA offers cash awards in these yearly prizes for people who can develop robotic lifters, material scientists who can come up with these strings. It's like amazing. It blew me away.
That's quite a more recent thing, the whole like prize for developing technology. That must save a lot of research money, because you get these other guys to do all the work.
Well, okay, so, you know, I haven't actually thought of this exactly before, but that brings me to like something that I think is really key to this book, right? Like, the book is not like about pessimism. It's not, because I'm a scientist. I'm like, you know, yeah. Go scientists, rock on.
That's, and yeah, that, totally. This is like so much like looking at so much as that happened and so much potential with stuff.
Yeah, and obviously a book appeared. If there was nothing, there would be no room for a book. But what we have now is we have situations where people are offering a lot of money, like as a prize, yeah, for other people who can come and make sci-fi stuff real. I mean, as a mode of research, that's amazing, right? Because it's totally based on people getting excited about something. It's like, holy shit, I bet I can make a car that doesn't need a driver. I'm going to go for it, you know? And that's as opposed to like a different method, which is the normal research method, which is I'm going to bid on a grant, or the industrial method where it's like, I bet I can make $1 million, let me hire some scientists, and you just get assigned this
Let's
thing.
Let's see how many guns we can stick on it.
Yeah, hey, man. Listen, Lewis, I know you can get another gun on there, damn it. Yeah, so, you know, it's like this whole thing where it's like the carrot versus the stick, right?
Yeah.
You know, now we have, nobody tries to win one of these competitions unless they're into it. You know?
Yeah.
And I think that really reflects an optimism about science and technology that hopefully, you know, is pervading everybody, not, you know, just everybody who's growing up right now, who, you know, they're growing up with, people have toys right now that are technologically so advanced that they would be like worth $1 billion if they had this toy when I was like 8, you know, like an ornithopter toy. Have you seen this?
No, what's that?
Wowie Toys has an ornithopter. Okay, an ornithopter is a flying platform that flaps its wings like a bird. It's extremely hard to do. It's extremely, really, really hard to put
together. So they managed to mass produce.
Yeah, they got it. You could just buy it as a kid. It's totally normal. Kids now are like, an ornithopter, screw that. Big deal. Who cares, right? It's like, I wonder what they're going to come up with when they get older, right?
It's quite interesting being like the age that we're at. Like, you're around 30, right?
Right, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm almost there.
I'm 29, so okay. I'm walking down the Green Mile.
We're from that generation of where, you know, we weren't growing up with the internet, but then it became a facet of our lives. It's,
yeah.
You know, older than adolescence, I guess. I don't know when you got your first internet connection. You probably had a BBS.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, 2400 baud, the BBS, yeah. It's one person who could call at a time. And usually my friends.
That lived at the same street.
Yeah.
But still, it's interesting, like, seeing such a progress to the point where it's like cities are wireless now.
Yeah.
Or like, if you got your laptop, you know, you can go anywhere.
But actually, on that note, I mean, the progress of technology has been amazing, but I still have to ask, who cares? Because I don't have a jetpack, right? Who cares? Oh, wow, I'm on the internet. Ooh, that's mundane, man. Ooh, cell phones. I can talk to anybody anytime.
You don't
can
want
I do
Bluetooth?
It from a jetpack? No. Can I do it from a space vacation? No. It's like there are technologies that capture your imagination, and there are technologies that are practical that you just get used to. And really, rationality is not involved on a high level whenever you're thinking about wanting a jetpack or a flying car. Would you kill yourself in 5 minutes? Yes. Would you want it? Yes. Like,
how many times did you watch The Rocketeer?
The Rocketeer, you know, he was too wooden. He never really got me I never really got totally caught
up. The comic was really good.
Was it? Okay, okay.
I recommend the comic.
Yeah.
It's by this guy, Dave Stevens. That's pretty much the only comic he did.
Huh.
He made his money on Rocketeer and walked away.
I'm finished.
Yeah, pretty much. Total set of, like, the 40s style of, like, the Betty Page girl and all that kind of stuff. So, it's good stuff. One thing is, like, we're talking about, you know, who people are going to the potential. Is there a lot of situations where you think there is potential, but you don't know it because the military-industrial complex. I don't want to go into like a total.
Oh
like,
yeah, no. Hey, no. I did a show with Art Bell recently.
Oh no.
Yeah. Come on. You're not gonna. I have to say that I have worked for defense contractors. I have worked at places like Microsoft Research, which are just industrial places, and I've also worked in academia, you know,
yeah.
in schools. And the smartest people are in academia. And the most advanced technology is in academia. And the second smartest people are people who have just decided to leave school and go to a place like Microsoft Research, Intel Research, Google, places like that. Those are where all the really bright people are at. Not impressed with my experience working for like Northrop Grumman. I mean, really bright people, but not at the level of creativity.
It's a different. So, it's more of kind of automatons where they're just doing their duty.
Yeah, I mean, it's like a government job.
Yeah.
Who really works hard when it's a government job? You know, and so I'm not personally really impressed, or I don't believe that the military-industrial complex is like miles ahead of anybody. If they were, I think we would know it. And it's like, and I mean, I've just seen ineptitude up face, not at necessarily any place I've worked, but just over time. And plus, you know, a lot of the military stuff, people think it's like a government agency that's got all this stuff.
Yeah.
Like there's some central government place, like DARPA or the DOD. They just hand out money. They don't really have researchers, right?
Yeah.
So they'll sketch out a bid, like a contract. They'll say, we're willing to give $5 million to someone who can hit all these points. They'll have three or four bidders who come up, they'll award them a preliminary round, they'll each get like 50 grand, they'll come with their prototypes and they'll pick somebody.
Yeah.
And then that company, you know, maybe it's the Skunk Works or something, you know, maybe those people are, this small group of people are going to go someplace and create some technology that, you know, is really out there. But it's not DARPA that's doing it, right? DARPA, those guys are like sci-fi writers. Like, the guys writing those contracts are great. They're like, well, hell, I want a robot that can go out on the battlefield and scoop people up with these crazy spatula arms.
And you know, this other people would actually get crushed, you know. Because
well, I mean, they're just writing, you know, then he's going to shove him inside in his belly and he's going to fly, drive off the battlefield, and while the soldier's stuck inside, we're going to do remote teleoperated surgery on the soldier. That's real. There are prototypes for that. It's called a bear is the prototype for the spatula scooping thing.
The spatula
is completely the bear robot, B-E-A-R, incredible. Works. Actually works. It looks like a centaur. It's like a human torso melded.
It sounds like this Trojan horse, like of Battlefield.
Well, this is, so those, I was mixing two different contracts. There's a different contract for a UGV ambulance that can just pop open the back and scoop a person inside into the surgery. The bear is a separate project, but I mean, it's kind of great. People are like, well, you know, DARPA's crazy, but let's try. There's money involved, after all.
What kind of stuff do you see them trying in the academia level? Because you've got the crazy ideas.
Academia, you get your money from DARPA a lot, just as much. Academia will bid on the same contracts as military contractors. And that's because, and I have to say this, because I don't think military money is necessarily bad. It a lot of times will fund fundamental research. And so in academia, though, you're also getting funded by the National Science Foundation, the National Institute for Health. You know, this is, all my stuff is, all my experience is based in the United States, so I'm naming funding agencies from the States. But so you end up working on helping elderly people, or sometimes if you're just doing something crazy, like at Carnegie Mellon, they have the Entertainment Technology Center. So you've got people just working on the coolest stuff, like how to make realistic cloth, right? Or how do you do this? How do you take a piece of velvet and have it in real life and it's hanging, and you wiggle it and you look at how it ripples and you touch it and you feel it, and then you translate that to a piece of velvet inside a computer, right? So you're playing a video game and a person is wearing a velvet robe versus a cloth robe, and it moves differently.
Oh, wow.
And like, you have to simulate that, and it's like, okay, people are working on it. It's crazy. It's great.
It's always new jobs for animators.
Yeah.
Do you play a lot of video games?
Yes, I say, indeed I do. I've been playing the Xbox 360 a lot.
Not for the Wii with the weird...
You know, I tried the Wii. I went into... So, in fact, the Wii, I think, infringes on a patent that I have. when I was at Microsoft Research, we created something called the X-Wand, which is the Wii. Exactly. The device that it figures out. It uses accelerometers and gyroscopes to, and maybe a magnetometer, like a three-axis compass, to figure out where it's at in space and also to figure out the forces that are acting on it. Yeah, we made one of those and got a patent for it awarded several years ago. We used to sword fight with them.
Sword fight or lightsaber fight?
Lightsaber fight. Hello. Come on, man. Totally. And I had it set up so that you could actually trace out the alphabet, and it used a machine learning algorithm to recognize what letters you were making and things like that.
Oh, wow.
And so, first of all, I wasn't super impressed with the Wii. I was like... kind of felt ripped off, even though it's a beautiful thing, and I totally was not ripped off. I mean, at all. I'm kidding about that. And obviously Microsoft would have spoken up if they thought they were. But when I went to use it, I was like, I played it in the store, and I was like, meh.
Didn't have the same...
Didn't get me. I mean, I like tangible interfaces. I like Guitar Hero. That's so much fun. It's at my favorite bar. But... the Wii hasn't caught me. I bet it'll get me before too long. But it's the 360, yeah. I dreamt about Crackdown last night, capturing an orb. I only need a couple more, but they're impossible to find. Sucks.
I'm still stuck with my old Xbox.
Really?
One day.
Too bad. I suggest get an Xbox 360, buy Oblivion, and just say goodbye to everybody for like a month, because you're finished. Be sure to have snacks for the loading screens.
What kind of game is it?
Oblivion is just the huge role-playing game.
Okay, I like the role-playing.
Just gigantic.
My favorite was the Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic.
Oh, yeah, forget about it. That was great. I played the shit out of that game. Curse, is that okay?
Yeah, we're in Canada.
Okay.
Listener discretion be advised.
Yeah, that game you had to play once as a good guy, then you had to play again as a bad guy.
And then
right?
You were done with it, though, I found.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, totally. Well, come on, what are you going
to
do?
I never really wanted to play as a good guy, though.
Really? I had to. I felt obligated. I have video game karma. I cannot kill a non-player character without feeling for it. You want to know an interesting fact? This may be, I may be sharing something that is illegal for me to share, and if so, I apologize to my friend. You know who you are. He works at Microsoft Research, and he has access to all of the Xbox Live data, right?
Yeah.
And sad statistic here, but 2.5 billion people have died in Halo. It's staggering, isn't it?
Who cares what these people in Iraq?
We've got the virtual visor piling up on the internet, clogging up the inner tubes. Yeah, he called me up to tell me that the other day. He was so somber. It's awful. Anyway, so I apologize if that's some kind of proprietary information that I've shared. There's only going to be more. Yeah. There's only going to be more going down that path.
Halo people, it's the end of the world for you.
Ground control to Major Tom. Ground control to Major Tom. Take your protein pills and put your helmet on. Ground control to Major Tom. Commencing countdown, engines on. 3, 2, check ignition, 1. And make God's love be with you.
You've got this book, Where's My Jetpack? You've got How to Survive a Robot Uprising.
Yep.
You also were mentioning you do online articles.
So I do a ton of different things. I've been working for Popular Mechanics, so I'm a contributing editor, whatever that means. It sounds really good. It just means I write.
Resume.
Yeah, I know. Or the bio, right? Basically, I write an online column for them every other week about all kinds of stuff. Robots right now. I mean, obviously, it all has to do with robots at some point. I am their resident roboticist. Doesn't mean I live there, but I'm
you're
on
the
call.
Guy. You're the robot guy.
And I write for the magazine like probably once every 2-3 months.
Oh, okay.
I like writing little things. Being a journalist, really hard. writing a full-on, full-length article for a magazine, oh, man, so much work. So the other thing, though, is I've actually finished writing the next robot book, which is How to Build a Robot Army, Tips on Defending Planet Earth Against, I think it's like dinosaurs and aliens, zombies and stuff like that, pirates and witches.
When I saw you last time, you were talking about possibly a robot versus zombie thing or something.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking about that, and so yeah, that's what this is. This is basically stuff like, let's say your house is surrounded by zombies. All you got to draw on are your robot comrades who are all around you. Obviously, they're waiting to have an uprising, but for now, you're forced back to back into combat. So it's questions like, how do you weaponize a Roomba, right? You got a Roomba. How do you make that thing into a weapon?
That's or a little vacuum
that's
cleaner.
That's the frisbee-looking vacuum cleaner. How do you how to turn your regular car into an unmanned ground vehicle? Like, how are you going to do that so that you can fire an Uzi out of the sunroof while it's trying to pipe on to everyone? All kinds of stuff. And, you know, it was really fun. And it's really, really informative, too, which is obviously my goal with those. It's all about how to cooperate with robots, which is really interesting because this is a place where a lot of research is happening. Like, first of all, there's just the face-to-face interaction with a robot.
Yeah.
Like, face recognition, speech recognition. I mean, how do you give a command to a robot? How do you talk to a robot? There are, like... there's a study of NASA astronauts, right, that showed that whenever they were telling each other to do things, they changed their point of view like six different times. They'd say, it's to my right, it's to the left of your hand, it's above the yellow knob, it's to the north, you know.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, for a robot, that's really complicated. Humans do it automatically. Yeah. It's all these little things where you really get into the mind of the robot. So that's a really fun book. That's all finished, and it's being illustrated by Richard Horn.
Did a great job.
Oh my god, okay, so I had like a nerdgasm the other day. I got all the illustrations for the latest book, and all the illustrations that he's ever done for me are beautiful and wonderful, but these just kick the shit out of those.
Oh yeah.
They're so good. They're so funny and clever. Like, I was just so happy. It was ridiculous.
Go ahead.
So, like, you know, when it's like, how do you use robots to fight mummies, right? Something everyone needs to know. Yeah. Like, he's got, like, this hieroglyphic with all these zombies, these robots. Like,
as more museums get mummies.
Yeah, the mummy problem is really, it's growing. And
The Rock might become a mummy again. Or was he actually a mummy, or was he was a scorpion king?
Well, you know, he was a type of mummy. And there are several types of mummies. There are... Did you hear the Monster Squad is coming out on DVD? If you remember that, that was
that the old Michael J. Fox one?
No, it was. No. But it was like that. It was like a Goonies type cast of kids fighting against all the classic monsters.
Yeah.
So great. Anyway,
who is in it?
Oh, just some of those little snot-nosed kids who grew up to be
any of the Coreys?
Drug addicts. Yeah, I think
Corey Haim is pretty atrocious. My friend gave me a copy of Me, Myself, and I. It's just that. Corey thing for his fan club when he just had a bout of he was racked out in coke or something, and he's like, I know you guys worried about me, but I'm fine now. And then it's like shows him playing hockey, tennis, and he's like, look at me, I love hockey, I'm from Canada, I'm from Toronto. And then
I'm playing hockey and I'm not even high.
The best is he's got like this whole rack of keyboards, and it's just like the worst. You could tell, like, anyone who's like touched a keyboard, it's the pre-programmed synth music, whatever it is, that come along, like
kind of like Wesley Willis. Have you ever seen?
I love Wesley Willis. Yeah. Wesley Willis is great.
So sad, but he passed away. But yeah, his music was fantastic. I've actually went to see him when he was around, and the music was great. The lyrics, obviously fantastic, Disturbed. But it was the hawking loogies into a bucket that kind of got me. Yeah, and also all of his pieces were laminated, and people would shout out, you know, sing the one about, sing Rottweiler's ass, you know. And he's like... that's not happening, you know. Like, you shut up. I am not going to jail. I'm not going to jail tonight, you know.
Like, and then it's the headbutting thing.
Which...
He'll, like... He, literally... I mean, Wesley Willis is, like, huge guy, and he... will go and headbutt people sometimes.
Yeah. Like, I wouldn't get
greening.
I would not
load.
Get near the guy. Anyway, yeah, go Wesley.
Back to technology.
Right.
What are some fantastic stuff that you've seen coming along? You know, other than not having a jetpack, is there anything that's really excited you?
Well,
in the recent
reading about Zeppelins blew me away. Like, I don't think that anybody who's never seen a Zeppelin, like me included, can really grasp how big they were and how amazingly gigantic. Like, they were as long, they were like 800 feet long, right? So like a blue whale is about 100 feet long. So it's 8 times longer than a blue whale. And a blue whale, pretty big. So anyway, reading about that blew me away. Like, imagining these things, especially whenever they wreck, like there was this one, I think the Macon or the Akron, where the tail fin got ripped off by a storm, and like the tail fin fell into the ocean. The tail fin of this thing was like the size of an ice skating rink or something, you know, like literally, you know, and it's amazing. And now, of course, they're working on, there's a company called Aeroscraft that's working on another luxury blimp. Or it's not technically a blimp. It's a dirigible.
Like
a, yeah, right. It's a rigid frame balloon, right? It's got a rigid frame. A blimp doesn't. It's held up with its own internal pressure, and that's why the Goodyear blimp is nothing to me.
You heard it here first.
Yes, the Goodyear blimp is not a Zeppelin. So anyway, I'm kind of jealous of everybody that was around back then when Zeppelins were around. But, you know, I'm looking forward to getting one of those soon.
Just for your backyard.
Well, no, I mean, just to go on vacation. Like, can you imagine going on vacation in an aircraft that's, like, only a few hundred feet off the ground and the size of a city block and just, I mean, like a casino-sized area.
Yeah.
Not like an airplane. Not like everything we've associated with air travel is awful. Airports are designed to drive you insane.
I know.
Right? Although the Toronto airport is really good.
I like the Chicago one. I went to the Chicago in October as the, go back to your book, the sliding walkways.
The slide walk, yeah.
With this incredible light display on top.
Yeah. You know what else it has that Toronto does not have? The slide walk has a repetitive voice at the end that says, please watch your step. The slide walk is about to end, over and over and over. And it's like, you know what, people, I can read.
Yeah.
Put a sign there. And that's what they do in Toronto. There's a sign that says, watch your step.
You see, that's
beautiful.
The difference between America and Canada.
You know, there are some American airports that get it right. It's basically, anyone that knows anything involved in airports, please just listen to me. Visual, not auditory. Okay? If you're going to tell somebody something, make it visual. If you're going to have a cart, put a light on it. Don't put a loud, repetitive beep on it. It drives people insane. Like me. So anyway, that's what they do in Toronto as well.
What about blind people?
That's what the bells are for.
Okay.
On those things.
Slightly less annoying than a oppressive voice telling you to watch your step.
God, so awful. Anyway, the slidewalks are awesome. I love those. Those things can technically go 100 miles an hour.
That's right? Crazy.
So Heinlein had a book called The Roads Must Roll. There's a story. And they go 100 miles an hour. The ones we have now, they go a mile and a half. And it's pathetic, really. And the reason it goes that fast is because it all moves, the whole strip moves at a constant speed. And that's the fastest speed at which you can safely step on and not get your
feet. What if they have, like, progressively speeding up?
Exactly. Hello, that's the accelerator strip idea, right? And you can do that in two ways. You can do that front to back, like exactly what we have now, except you get on 1.5 miles an hour, and then the next one moves at 3 miles an hour. And again, it's the derivative, right? It's just that step up in speed is safe as long as it's just 1.5 miles an hour. You do that a few times, you're moving pretty fast. You're booking it, right? And then, you have decelerator strips. Alternately, you could have them side by side. So you could choose how fast you accelerate just by walking laterally across, right? So if you go to the center strip, you're wearing, like, wind goggles. Like, yeah. Oh, man. And, you know, these things, these sidewalks are cheaper to build than trams, you know, and things like that. So, man, if I could get all Walt Disney and build, like, a city of the future. Slidewalks, man, everywhere. Save some money, keep people fit, and also, you know, sidewalks.
Would it keep people fit? I think it would do the opposite.
No, no, no. Walking? You're still walking.
No.
You're walking people, the whole time.
Knowing people, they'd go on the fastest one and then stand there.
Would you get bored standing?
Whenever
an airplane pulls up and stops, do people sit in their seats until they're told that they can, disembark? Hell no, nobody wants to sit down. You want to stand up.
But, like, you know, going on an escalator up, people stand.
Well, that's because you're walking upstairs.
My biggest pet peeve, broken escalators.
Oh, come on. Mitch Hedberg pointed it out best, that escalators are beautiful because when they break, they're just stairs.
But they're not the same height as stairs.
Are they not?
No, I don't think so. And I think that's just it. You're going, like, at a different height of steps.
Huh. So, throw you off.
My pet peeve. My anger.
Well, in the future, there are no stairs. It's all jetpacks.
Let's hope. Rocketeer.
Let's do it.
Yeah. Thanks for coming to join us. Daniel?
Yeah, it's fun as always.
And I hope you have fun taking down Nintendo.
The hatch is coming open. Okay. It's open. Verified. I'm moving outside. Okay, I'm letting go.
Marty Poople. Marty Poople. It's almost 3 o'clock. Crimes and Treasons taking over in the next 2 hours. We got a special guest, Riley Rells, in the studio. It's going to be 2 hours of the funk. If you don't know about Tuesday nights, you got to get down to the Century House, where the freshest kids are playing every Tuesday. It's dope. It's a new hot spot. Got anything you want to say?
Not really.
What up, Momo? What up,
Momo,
Jules?
Yeah.
Where's Mostradamus? We're looking for Jules, Rico, Pokes, if you're in jail and listening.